It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2022 returning MOI Global instructor Jean-Pascal Rolandet, manager of the LT Funds, a Geneva-based investment firm focused on a buy and hold strategy based on a limited number of European stocks with a 5+ year investment horizon. Jean-Pascal has more than 25 years of equity investment experience and has founded the first investment club at the leading French business school, ESSEC. Prior to establishing the LT funds, Jean-Pascal had various executive positions at BNP Paribas for 22 years, including as Paribas' French equity strategist. It's always great to have you with us, Jean-Pascal. This has become somewhat of a tradition, and I am very happy that you could join us again this year. So without further ado, I'd like to turn it to you for your presentation. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, John. It's, as you say, it's always a pleasure year after year to introduce an investment idea. Some of these investment ideas have turned good or very good, some less good, but that's how investment works. Yes, indeed, we run money on a long-term basis, as the name stands for, and sometimes stocks do not turn quite right immediately, but after a couple of years, the market finally realizes the fundamentals, and then the stock not only recovers but turns out to be fruitful. So Pandora is this year's idea. I have a couple of ideas a year or more, up to 3, 4, 5 across our various portfolios, because we, as I said, we invest for the long term and we don't turn our portfolios very much. So Pandora is a Danish company. It's a very dynamic company, which started about 40 years ago in Copenhagen, was set up by Mr. Per Enevoldsen, who was a Danish goldsmith, and his wife. And they traveled to Thailand, found that there was interesting jewelry in Thailand. 40 years ago, Thailand was a very exotic destination, and they started to import these very exotic jewels. So things went well, and progressively they opened more stores, and crucially they started to have their own design to adapt the Thai style to European taste, to be more fitting with European taste. So that was the first crucial step, and the jewelry was still made in Thailand, of course. And then the company decided that it was jewels for the mass market, but beauty of these jewels, that even though they were retailing at a reasonable price, they were hand finished. So the key thing to understand to Pandora, it's that it's affordable jewelry. It's not luxury jewelry, but it's good quality, hand-finished, affordable jewelry. And that continued to work. And then Pandora developed another important concept for the company, which was the and which still is the key product of the company, charm bracelets. So basically, you buy a bracelet, and then you have an array of charms of all sorts and all fashions and all types of jewels, and you personalize your bracelet with these hundreds categories of charms. So you really have to your own jewel, your unique own jewel, at an affordable price. So that's also a very important point, because that not only attracts repeat purchases, but that makes, even though it's a mass market jewel, that's a unique jewel. And progressively, Pandora started to go abroad. And so, of course, all this expansion needed funds. And in 2010, the group was the majority of the group was sold to a private equity group called Accel. That was 20 years after the founder opened his shop, and he started to deserve or decide to have a well-deserved retirement, still maintaining strong links with Thailand. And progressively, thanks to this Accel group, the Pandora concept or the Pandora chain started to go global. So definitely, they opened stores in North America, in the UK. They gave franchises as well to accelerate this successful concept of affordable jewelry, but unique jewelry, and that was a smashing success. And private equities are medium-term investors; they are not really long-term investors. So after a while, they need to make profit out of their investment, if anything, to take their carry. The group was listed in 2010, and that was another key date for the group, because it started to be even more recognized. Actually, I said that Accel bought a stake in 2010. That was a bit earlier. So basically, Pandora was listed. It was a smashing success, and the management started to be more preoccupied and with the share price than with running the operation. So they focused on the most profitable product, which was the charm bracelet, and started to forget about other products, and started to forget about how stores were placed or run. So after being a smashing success, the financial performance of the group started to deteriorate because of this short-term share price performance obsession by the management. So it was a beautiful train which got derailed, basically, because of the lack of attention of the driver of the engine. And since 2019, finally, the board put, there was a succession of managers, but in 2019, the board found the right one. And the new management in place is very common sense, and simply found a beautiful train which was derailing. And it simply put the train back on its tracks. So it started to refocus on the whole range of products, and started to pay more attention to the stores, started to pay more attention to franchisees, to how, because some franchisees were successes and some were less successful, like in Japan. And to have a miss in Japan is a bit of a pity, because that's a large market. And so basically, this new management since 3 years ago, has done a superb job in putting back Pandora on its tracks. And so that's the rough story. So they have stores. Everybody has, most people have noticed the Pandora stores in large or medium-sized cities. And so everybody can understand the concept and can see the jewels. these remain good quality jewels, still made in Thailand, in one very large plant, which has started to become a hub. The group back on its track has started to grow again. So we have reached sales. This year's sales should be 26 billion krona, which is roughly 3 billion euros. You can see that it's really a mass market because they sell 100 million pieces of jewel in 100 countries. So it's really a global operation. The market cap has shrank a little bit, and it's because the share price has collapsed. Actually, there is a typo in this market cap, I think. It's not 6.7 billion, it's 33.7 billion. So we will correct the typo on the final version of the slides. And it has a 100% free float. Now the Axel Group has completely exited the company over time. You can see that it has 26,000 employees, which is very large. Many of them are in Thailand, where all jewels are made. Many people work in the stores, basically. And the new management has started to realize that Pandora had grown quite a few weaknesses in its enormous growth. The one weakness was that actually there is one in a very large plant in Thailand, only one plant in Thailand for such a global operation. So if anything happens to Thailand, would be floodings, or as happened 10 years ago, or be a king which is upset with Pandora because it doesn't like these relatively affordable jewels, it can be a problem. It's not the case, of course. Pandora maintains excellent relationships in Thailand, but the management has decided to open a second plant in Thailand to start with, benefiting from the cluster of knowledge that is there for making affordable jewelry, but is opening a second very large plant in Vietnam, which remains a low-cost country or light-cost country. And Vietnam also has some expertise in manufacturing jewelry. And this jewelry also sometimes, as ESG developed, the origin of the gold, the silver, etc., was not always completely controlled. So the new management started to track where gold and the silver, etc., were coming from. And not only that, but they started to commit to use only recycled gold and recycled silver to avoid these problems. So their goal is to reach 100% recycled gold production and recycled silver. They will get to that amount. And at the moment, 54% of the gold is and silver are recycled, come from recycled gold. And so that is a risk which is diminishing. And actually, we can move to the next slide, which is the SWOT analysis. When the previous management started to focus only on the most profitable product, charms, that worked very well. But charms is still representing 51% of the sales. And if ladies decide that slide charms are out of fashion or bracelets are out of fashion, that can be a problem. So the new management has started to reduce the dependency on charms, and so they have developed all sorts of ranges, including different bracelets, rings, etc. And there was another risk that the management discovered and has started to manage, which is that over time there was a very good and very strong chief creative officer, Mr. Fairchild, and who is an American living in Copenhagen, but they realized that there was a strong dependency to him, who was starting to be, let's say, less young and perhaps less creative, although he's still very creative. And they started to broaden the pool of talent, creating jewels. So now there is a circle around Mr. Fairchild of young designers who create attractive pieces of jewelry more in line with the times, because you cannot be creative for so long, or at least some are, but it's rare that you are creative, you remain creative for decades. And they also realized that actually they were in the fashion business, and that was a threat. Again, I don't know, maybe next year gold would not be so fashionable or whatever. So they continued to diversify this fashion risk by forging partnerships with Disney, for example. So Pandora is making all the Disney jewels that you can find at Disney stores or Disney parks. And also they do sell charm bracelets with the Disney charms. They also took from Star Wars, which belonged to Disney, but which is managed separately from Walt Disney. They are making charms out of the Star Wars saga and have started to develop this concept of making jewels out of successful movies. So that is also a way to reduce the fashion element of Pandora. And so far in this development of partnerships, they have been very successful. They, of course, were heavily reliant on stores. And they discovered that to be reliant on stores was a problem when there was a COVID shutdown. So this COVID shutdown made them accelerate the development of e-commerce, which the previous management has neglected. So they have caught up very strongly in terms of online sales, which now are close to 30% of the group. So you see, this management is really starting to manage the group. After having putting back the group on track, it started to add to decrease the risk of the group and to add more growth engines to the group. So one growth engine is going to be diamonds. They have decided to speed up their expansion in diamonds. Of course, not big diamonds, but small ones, as this is a very profitable trade. But Like they decided to go for recycled gold only, 100% is the goal. They have decided for diamonds to promote lab-grown diamonds. And that is for two reasons. One is that you control the origin of your diamonds in terms of sourcing and ESG much more. You can offer diamonds at a more affordable price, which is in line with the concept of the of Pandora. Again, the target is not that market. They don't go and fight the luxury jewel worlds. They consider that their market is the mass market, the affordable market, the $100 jewel. Not the cheap jewel, $20 or $30 that you can find at every street corner, but the roughly $50 to $100 jewel. So this is working very well. They have started also to gently introduce jewels for kids and even for men with odd bracelets or rings, and that is working very well. So that they went through the COVID crisis. Of course, they suffered from the closure of their stores, but in the end, they did reasonably well thanks to a much better product management. And the new management also has started to work on franchises, and terminated some franchises. They bought some franchises, and but some of them, like Japan, remain in unprofitable contracts. So there is still plenty of growth ahead, either by buying franchisees and or by developing Asia, because paradoxically, they developed largely in mature markets. 85% of sales are in developed markets, largely Europe and North America. So they think, and they guess they are right, or the numbers show that they are right, that there is plenty of scope for growth in Asia, in China, in India in particular. Although in India, it's difficult because Indians are very good at jewelry. They are among the best in affordable jewelry, and they have a very long jewelry tradition, centuries-old jewelry tradition. So that's another growth opportunity that they have decided to exploit. You see that the group is moving to another dimension, and they are now truly the world leader in affordable jewelry, possibly the world leader in jewelry, depending on whether you consider Swiss watches as a jewelry, as I do. It's the Swiss watch is the best man's jewel. Of course, I'm Swiss, so I'm a bit biased. But excluding Rolex, excluding Swatch Group, etc., they are probably the biggest jewelers by now, and they are truly global. And that is thanks to this excellent management team, which arrived 3 years ago. Another competitive advantage is their low production cost. You cannot really say that Switzerland is a low production country. And they are highly profitable, as we are going to see with the numbers. Finishing with this SWOT analysis, in terms of weakness, sometimes they bought their franchises were very successful. So when they buy them, they put intangibles on the balance sheet. So these high intangibles are essentially intangibles coming from when they buy franchisees. And they have some debt, of course, but not too much. Their gearing ratio is 45%, and net debt to EBITDA is less than one. I put that as the fact that this debt is on floating rate as a weakness, because frankly, I was running a bit short of weaknesses. So that's more or less all for the SWOT. The rest of the threats is a bit run of the mill. Everybody is vulnerable to supply chain disruption, especially when you manufacture in Thailand to distribute in the Western world. Of course, when you are a jewel using gold and silver, you depend on the raw material prices. So there is also the threat coming from copycats, but I put it as the last threat because, frankly, they have a unique concept, they have a unique presence, and many copycats emerge and they flourish for about 2 to 3 years, and then they don't last for so long. And sometimes they are too successful and they lost their financial focus or their long-term focus, and they sort of disappeared. We had several cases in Europe of chains like this, and but so far there is not a strong copycat. There is a very strong jeweler in the US called Signet. That's probably their strongest competitor. Signet is a very well-run group in the US, originally from the UK. They don't have this concept of like Pandora, especially the wide range, including a partnership with Disney or Star Wars. So I would say that Signet is their key competitor, largely for the US or the UK, but not on a global basis. So moving to the financials. We can see that sales are growing steadily. So 2020 was a low point due to COVID shutdowns, but since the new management arrived in 2019, sales, and including the COVID 2020 trough, sales grew at a 3% CAGR. But that again includes the trough of 2020, and they recovered and surpassed their top in this year. They are with the record numbers this year. And for the forecast, we really have very low visibility for 2023. So this is why we put in our forecast a flat year in 2023 to be on the cautious side, because you mentioned I was a strategist at Paribas for 10 years in France and in Japan, and frankly, it's very foggy for 2023. So because they resisted so well in the COVID years, and because they developed their online offer, and because they keep buying franchises, I have, thanks to the track record, I have simply put a flat year, because consumers may be more cautious next year. But frankly, the latest H1 numbers were very strong, and they see no real sign of slowdown, which with which the market completely disagrees, because the share price has collapsed for no reasons other than fears that the there would be Armageddon tomorrow, or that people would no longer have money because they would be spending all their budgets on fuel or electricity. And so I would not be surprised to have a cautious 2023 forecast, but for 2022, thanks to the very strong first half, I'm reasonably comfortable with the numbers. So this year and last year, we recovered the record EBITDA margin. You can see that the EBITDA margin of 25% is huge. And there are very few businesses which can boast a 25% EBITDA margin. Or operating margin is close to operating margin. And the group is back in a strong, not only profit mode, but cash flow generating mode. And they have no problem in financing this big plant in Vietnam. And the size of the plant shows how confident they are to keep growing the group. So basically, they think that they will be able to produce 200 million pieces of jewelry with the same quality with a 10-year horizon, probably. So the gearing ratio is largely due to the purchase of franchisees and also because they are in the process of building this new plant. But you can see that the business is throwing off cash flow hugely, and they should start to grow a cash pile from as early as next year, unless there is an Armageddon, of course. And so the share price collapse is really, to me, unjustified. And in terms of valuation, we have fallen to very low level for a business of this quality in terms of segment fundamentals. So it has to be reminded that the oldest jewel ever found is a necklace of shells, which was found in a South African cave, beautifully displayed in a cave. And this shell necklace is 100,000 years old, has been dated to be 100,000 years old. So the attraction for jewel is in the human mindset. And if you look at all civilization, whether they are Aztec, Maya, Inca, Egyptian, Chinese, Mesopotamian, there are jewels everywhere in every civilization. So I doubt the market for jewel will stop in 2023, or as the share price would decelerate strongly as the share price would imply. In addition, people forget that in tough times, what if you need to offer a jewel to your fiancé or whatever, if you are tight on budget, you go for an affordable jewel. You don't go for a Cartier diamond. I mean, so unless you are in the super rich league, but for most people, the concept of affordable jewelry is what they like, especially if the design is fancy. It's a very robust business, and we expect the business to keep growing at 8% or 6 to 8% per annum, despite its size. And we expect the share price to grow much more, of course. So it's now on 5 times EBITDA, or less than that, 4.7 times 2022, and probably 4.4 times next year. It's on 7.5 times earnings. We basically think it's the right time to buy this stock. After such a derating, which is illustrated on the chart by page 6, you can see that on page 6, the stock basically halved. We think it's a good time to buy it, because if you look at the previous trough, or the long decline was due to the management erring on the short-term side, and then the COVID years. But we are not at all in this era. And meanwhile, the group has been put back on track, as I said. And so not only the management is much more focused and much better, but the fundamental risk of the group is much more diversified by thanks to the franchisee reduction. And so the group is controlling much more its stores thanks to a production base which is being diversified, the creativity base which is being diversified, and new businesses thanks to these partnerships with Disney, Star Wars, and others. If we summarize the investment case, page 5, because 40-minute presentation is enough, so we need to leave room for questions. Basically, the investment case is pretty simple and straightforward. It's the world number one in affordable jewelry, with a strong brand, solid, very well diversified growth now, be that geographically, by product styles, by range of products. It has, crucially, it has now a very good management team. So this management team is certainly financially minded, but is less obsessively focused on short-term numbers than the previous one, because it has understood that in normal conditions, not in troubled conditions like now, what the market appreciates is steady growth in numbers, not spectacular growth in numbers for a couple of years and then disappointing set of earnings. So we are now in the record year of Pandora in terms of numbers, thanks to the fact that all its stores are open. We are very conservative in restating our numbers, and frankly, on 4.5 times this year or next year's earnings, from a long-term standpoint, it's a bargain. It's an affordable jewelry. And especially as it has very little debt, it's throwing off cash the fountains of Rome. Not the Niagara Falls yet, but that's the image. The free cash flow yield is 15%, and return on capital employed 49%. So I think it's a good time, and it's a good stock. Two, it's a very good time to pick it up for the next 5 years. So we would have it at a 4% position in our portfolios, because again, it's not without risk. Yes, there is always the risk that the consumer are more thrifty in tough times, but again, that is cushioned by the affordable jewelry concept. Yes, there is the risk of margin pinch by the raw materials appreciation, but that's not the case for gold at the moment. So frankly, I'm not very concerned about that. And Pandora has enough purchasing power to pass that through, especially as its manufacturing costs are low. And it's still dependent on fashion, but less so. And to me, a 4% position is really fine. So that's it. Despite the share price collapse, we bought Pandora actually a bit before COVID, and but after the new management had been in place for 6 months and started to very quickly show good results. So we are very happy with this investment, and we monitor our investments on the quarterly or definitely yearly basis, but unless there is a problem, I would be confident to have it 10 years from now.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jean-Pascal, for your presentation. As always, perhaps we could start with capital allocation in light of their strong free cash flow. How do you see the capital allocation priorities, and is there anything you might prioritize differently than the management is doing?
So for the moment, they have they have three priorities. One is to build this Vietnam plant to reduce the risk. Two is to buy back franchisees because in the booming years, franchisees were given to all sorts of franchisees, and some of them were not so good, like in Japan. And so the priority is the second priority is to buy back the franchisee, to open new stores as well, and then of course they will probably I'm sure they will increase the dividend. So I'm fine with their allocation, and they are also, well, you cannot do that in 6 months, so they have worked on their sourcing for the last since they have been here. As well, the priority was to manage the COVID situation, of course, but now the COVID crisis is behind, and they are really investing in all aspects of the group, and increasing the dividend, I would say, is their last priority, but they accept that as they generate so much cash flow, they will increase the dividend. Another investment is to find new partnerships such as with Disney. And in that case, you have to pay for the Disney franchisee or Star Wars franchise. Sorry, not franchisee, but for the Disney franchise, the Star Wars franchise. And so often there is an upfront payment, but they have enough now. So I guess from 2024, the dividend is going to increase significantly. And for 2023, again, it's a completely foggy year, so they have not committed to anything. But if there is no Armageddon in 2023, the dividend will increase significantly, because they are full speed, and still there is surplus cash flow, free cash flow.
What would be the key performance indicators or data points to keep an eye on going forward to gauge how the thesis is playing out?
Market share. Market share is a key indicator, because they are very profitable already. So one question would be, where can they go in terms of margin? So they can always try to go up like the previous management did, but then that is at the expense of the affordable concept, and that is at the expense of the sort of image. So I don't think they will, and you see that on our forecast margins, EBITDA margins stay at 25%, even beyond the 2024. I think they will stay at 25, 26%. So it's really market share which needs to be monitored, and also their Asian expansion, because that's definitely a key source of growth and an underdeveloped market for Pandora at the moment. So Japan will take time to solve, because their franchisee has negotiated the contract, which is running for quite some time. And but in you need to check that their Chinese expansion is going well. And please don't come with, my God, the China is not doing well. China is doing reasonably well. It's managing its property bubble like nobody did before, especially compared to Japan, or compared to the US crisis of 2008. Nobody gets burned but the Chinese banks, and the Chinese banks are state-owned. So, and the state has $3.5 trillion dollars in sterilized money at the central bank, so it has plenty of room to manage this property crisis well. And the Chinese consumer is not bearing the brunt of this property bubble, although China makes sure that the economy keeps running steadily. And people forget that 4% growth for China today, in terms of marginal demand growth, it's equivalent to an 8% growth rate 10 years ago, because the economy has doubled since then. So I don't think the Chinese consumer is going to stop buying affordable jewels. So I don't think this is an issue. And therefore, altogether, I think it's a market share that needs to be monitored, especially in the West.
Just perhaps last question in terms of the cyclicality of the business in general, in the short term, if we did have a deeper global recession, what do you think would be the risk to your top line estimates?
So if there the risk would be, we would be 10% lower in terms of sales.
And
Because
the market.
that is thanks to the previous crisis. Well, it's difficult, because in 2008 or 9, they were in full expansion in terms of store opening or going global. So they showed quite some resilience. But judging by the COVID years, especially the first COVID year, sales went down by 15% when all shops, or 20% when all shops were closed. I mean, not all, but 80% of their shops were closed. So I would say that if we have a deeper recession, then I think I don't think we will have a recession next year. It will be the flattish year in terms of economy. So I'm not many people expect to. Everybody seems to expect a recession, but I'm not. I remain to be convinced. I think there will be a slowdown, but not a slowdown to zero. And that is what I reflect in my sales forecast. The downside of my forecast is probably 10%.
And the margin profile would suffer a lot if that were the case, or?
Not so much, a little bit, because of the operating leverage of operating stores with less sales, but let's say that we would go down to 20%
Okay.
instead of 16% during the COVID years, when stores were really shut, and that fixed costs were had to be paid for. The rents had to be paid. Of course, they tried to renegotiate rents during COVID years and got some compensations in terms of from various states in terms of keeping people. But you see that their operating margin did not go down to 8 or 4. So operating margins, if we had a deeper recession with sales at minus 10, would go to 20%.
Understood. Wonderful. Well, we will leave it there, Jean-Pascal. I would encourage our members to feel free to follow up should they have any questions or thoughts. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us again this year and share this investment thesis with the MOI Global community.
Well, thank you very much, John. Again, it's always a pleasure. You can see that I'm always enthusiastic about my stocks. And that overall they deliver and they are very robust companies.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jean-Pascal. All the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.